big show for you here today. It is the week 5 data dump. Ray Garvin joins me to give out the 10 stats you need to know heading into week 5. We've got a lot to get into here. We've got some underperforming big names, pass catchers in Philadelphia. Derrick Henry, is he on the decline? We talked through the Browns. Somehow that's a big storyline. Are the Browns benching Joe Flacco? Does it even matter for fantasy football? Plus, some receivers that are getting increased usage in the slot and why that matters for your fantasy teams. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Ray Garvin. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Matt, it's week 5. Can you believe that? Like, honestly, we're prepping for the show. We're talking. We're excited. We're disappointed. But you look up, and we are already here at week 5. It seems like we spent all offseason trying to figure out who's in what situation. Like, we're here now. I tweeted it out. I said, hey, week 5, Harmon and I, we are making calls now. People have questions. They've got to make decisions. Like, there's no more straddling the fence here in week 5. We're bringing the heat today. I'm excited to chop it up with you as always, baby.
Bro, we got bye weeks. We've got bye weeks this week, you know? I mean, our guy Roma Dunze, right? The Bears are on a bye. It's tough. I was not ready for bye week season. You know, I'm thinking about topics and data points for the show here, and I'm like, all right, I got to scroll down the list a little bit here. Like, maybe some guys that people are saying, should I start this guy? Should I start that guy? Because people are going to need some help here for these bye weeks. So it is definitely flying by here, the 2025 regular season. But this is, again, the point of the week where we usually pivot to the upcoming slate here. So we are pivoting to week 5 here on Tuesday on the Data Dump Show. We're going to be alternating between our 5 most important data points for the upcoming slate of games. But before we do that, we have some quarterback news to hit on. Lamar Jackson, Ravens quarterback, is set to miss week 5 and potentially longer with a hamstring injury that he suffered during the week 4 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Man, Ray, I'm sure it's happened before, but I struggle to remember a team that just looks so good on paper. It was my Super Bowl pick, the Baltimore Ravens, this year. I felt really good about it, both sides of the ball. And it's just like, we're heading into week 5, and it feels like the season is over for Baltimore, much less anyone who drafted Lamar Jackson in fantasy football, present company included on that one. So I am definitely reeling about this Lamar thing.
I'm just shaking my head. Those of you not watching right now, you're listening, you're driving, you catch it on, I'm just shaking my head. This is just disappointing. It's disappointing. It's frustrating. They were too my Super Bowl pick from the AFC. I thought they would represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. Mm. I pegged Lamar Jackson to win his third NFL MVP this year. And while he hasn't played bad at all, for this to pop up right now, amidst everything that's going on with this team, offensively, and more shockingly, in my opinion, what's not happening on the defensive side of the ball. And we're going to talk about a Raven a little bit later, but this is tough. If you drafted Lamar, this is tough for this offense.
It really is. And the backup quarterback is Cooper Rush, who I know you as a Cowboys fan and follower. You've seen a lot of Cooper Rush in your day. That when they signed him to be the backup, not that Cooper Rush has been a bad backup quarterback necessarily, you know, but typically you think like, all right, well, you want to kind of get a quarterback that has a similar style, you know, for your backup to your starter. You think about Tyrod Taylor in New York, obviously has a little bit of a similar style to Justin Fields. When he was younger, at least, he was a little bit more mobile. But then again, he was also the backup to Aaron Rodgers in New York last year. So maybe that means nothing. But again, there's some overlap, at least in terms of what you can do there. At different times, it's been like Robert Griffin III is the backup. Tyler Huntley, Snoop Huntley is the backup to Lamar Jackson. Now we got Cooper Rush. I mean, I think from a rushing perspective and from a passing perspective, there's not a lot of overlap in what those two guys do. So I have no idea what we're going to see on Sunday, much less going further here for Cooper Rush as the quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens.
It's very scary. It's scary if you were hoping or banking on some production for Mark Andrews. Isaiah Likely is now back into the mix, back into the lineup. Last week, didn't do anything, but he's on the field playing. Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, and Derrick Henry in the rushing attack. This is, and what's most damning and really scary about the situation are the words from head coach John Harbaugh when he essentially said, and I'm paraphrasing, like, we're not a good football team right now. Like the tone in which he talked about it and how he said it, there are some real issues happening right now, both sides of the ball for Baltimore. But the one player they cannot afford to lose was Lamar Jackson. Losing Derrick Henry is tough. Losing Zay Flowers is difficult to overcome, but losing Lamar, and then as you said, the replacement being Cooper Rush. Matt, you see it right here on the screen. The injuries are piling up. This quarterback fit seems scary, and nothing was working well in the first damn place.
Nope, not great. That is for sure. If you're looking for some sort of injury replacement, it's not as if there's just some great option sitting out there. You know, as I mentioned, we've got four teams on bye this week. So Packers, Steelers, Bears, they're on bye. The Falcons are on bye. Again, like that's another interesting one we're showing on the screen here right now. You know, Marcus Mariota, he runs that offense very similarly from just a timing perspective to a guy like Jaden Daniels. This is just a totally different world here with Cooper Rush as the backup quarterback to the Baltimore Ravens. I will say, if you're looking for, you know, if you're in a super, maybe not super flex league, but if you're in a one quarterback league, maybe Spencer Rattler can give you something. Rattler's actually been pretty productive. If you're looking for a replacement for Lamar Jackson, he's not been crazy productive in fantasy or anything, but we know that Saints offense is playing fast. He's actually the third most efficient scrambler from an EPA per play basis. Spencer Rattler is. I looked this up this morning. He's been an effective rusher for this team. There could just be something here for Spencer Rattler if you're looking for a deeper replacement. I want to give people someone, something that if they got to replace Lamar, a guy who is widely available. We asked the Ravens, we asked the YouTube chat with our poll here if the Ravens are cooked. 72% say yes, Ray, the Ravens are cooked. And I don't know if you realize this, man, but between this talking point, the way the Bengals looked on Monday night, and the team we are going to talk about next here in the first point from the data dump, Aaron Rodgers, Mike Tomlin, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are probably going to win the AFC North. How does that make you feel?
I've got no words, man. I've got no words. Aaron Rodgers is smiling. I thought the Ravens would dog walk this division. And then you lose to Joe Burrow. You're like, okay, since he's out of it, we're going to talk about a team in a second. And then there's no way. The answer to the question, are the Ravens cooked? Yeah, and it's not just Lamar Jackson, but yes, welcome home, fellas. It's that's why football, man, and the NFL in particular, is just such a great sport. The parity year over year, and the great X factor. As much stuff as we do, as much data as we dump on the people, Matt Harmon, X factors are always going to be the biggest X factor none of us can sort of account for, and it's tough. We saw this coming out of week four.
No question. So that is a great time for us to transition here. Without any further ado, welcome to the Week 5 Data Dump.
Yes, science!
My calculations are correct. You're going to see some serious...
All right, Ray, let's get into some serious stuff here. Starting with your first point, which is about the fourth team in the AFC North and how things are going for that particular operation right now.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of stuff swirling around the Browns right now. But one thing that is not speculative, one thing you don't have to guess on, and I had this loaded in the show doc bright and early this morning, Joe Flacco is B-A-D bad, Matt. Second right now in the NFL in damn pass attempts. You got to love that, 160 pass attempts, right? He's tied with Justin Herbert, second in dropbacks in the NFL, 170. Right, but despite this volume, he ranks dead last, 32nd in completion percentage, 58.1%, ahead of only Cam Ward and one spot behind Trevor Lawrence. Just, I want to add that for optional completeness. He's 32nd in yards per attempt, dead last amongst qualified quarterbacks. He's thrown 6 interceptions, second most in the NFL, only behind Geno Smith. His passer rating is actually below starter level. It's 33rd in the NFL, worse than every other starting quarterback. Dude, this situation is so bad. And it's not that we're actually starting Joe Flacco at all, but there are other pass catchers in the offense that we thought we wanted pieces of. And I'm not talking about the drop from Jerry Jeudy. He even said himself, I got to hang on to the damn ball when called upon. But this hurts anything that we thought we were going to get from Cedric Tillman, who's now banged up. Jerry Jeudy, Harold Fannin, David Njoku feels like an afterthought. They've got a good ground game. If they just had a complimentary passing attack, like, there could be more opportunity and fantasy potential inside of this offense. They have to make a move. That, like, they have to do something, because this ain't working, man.
No, and, you know, this is something that in the fantasy community was kind of, hey, as long as Joe Flacco is back there, you know, we'll be able to confidently start some of these pass catchers. And, you know, I liked Cedric Tillman as a late round pick, and he gave you a couple moments. He's now on IR. He's going to miss at least 4 weeks. He's dealt with a lot of injuries, even just short time in his NFL career. He's just kind of consistently been banged up, which is unfortunate for a guy that I think does show legit X receiver traits. Jerry Jeudy went inside the top 40 wide receivers. You know, David Njoku is a guy who people drafted to be a starting tight end. And Harold Fannin has been the talk of the waiver wire basically every single week because people want to start that guy. That was one thing where it's like, man, we're getting pretty crowded here for a team that people talk about the Browns as if they want to be run heavy. And I agree with you that Quinshon Judkins, you know, is a good back. And he looks like a guy that could be the long-term replacement for Nick Chubb. We've talked about him on the show here. You called him a top 10 running back the rest of the way. I can kind of get pretty close to that take here, but they're eighth in neutral pass rate. Like, they're not even just second in raw pass rates. They're in raw passing attempts. They're eighth in neutral pass rate. And, like, how often have they been in neutral situations? I'm not sure about that. I'd have to look deeper into the numbers on that one, because they're obviously not a good football team, but there is a lot of passing volume here. Nobody has a greater than 20% target share on this team. It's Jerry Jeudy at 18%, and then it's Tillman, it's Fannin, it's David Njoku. Going into week four before Cedric Tillman went down, all those guys were tied at like 15%. And if we don't have, and if we have just bad quarterback play here, these guys are kind of all completely unusable. I guess the question here, Ray, as the internet rumors are circulating here, we don't have an official announcement from the team about this, but Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the team, a few other folks as well, have said that it appears Kevin Stefanski is getting ready to bench Joe Flacco in favor of Dylan Gabriel for the Vikings game in London. Not a soft landing spot there for our buddy Dylan Gabriel to start a game, his first game in the NFL against the Vikings defense in London. But do you have any faith that Dylan Gabriel is going to be better than Flacco has been so far?
You know what? I think I got a little faith, because Flacco is legitimately dead last in everything. So if Dylan Gabriel is dead last, then I guess they're in the same spot that they're in. We'll see somebody else play. I mean, he can't move around. I mean, you watch him play, he cannot move around. The arm strength, it's strength is one thing. Getting it where it needs to go accurately on time, there's just no chemistry. There's no rhythm. Yeah, I think he could provide a different type of spark. You probably run a different type of offense with Dylan Gabriel, but I don't know if it's really going to change the outcome of the squad and what they can do. This is just a tough spot to throw out. And listen, Matt, we were talking pre-show. I know you don't dive into the college game this early, right? That's what I do. I love it. I'm not the tallest man in the world. I'm out there at the Senior Bowl. Me and Dylan Gabriel, we're eye to eye, baby. We're talking eye to eye. Me and Dylan, I got a picture of it and everything.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'8". I'm 5'8". They got him listed at 5'10". Ain't no damn way. We're eye to eye. This is a tough spot to put Dylan Gabriel at, man. This is a tough position to put him. I don't know, man. But Flacco has been literally the worst. There's nobody worse right now playing quarterback in the National Football League than Joe Flacco. There is a wild stat out there that his passer rating, all that advanced metrics, it's worse than what Deshaun Watson's was at this point in time last season. That's how bad it's been.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, I mean, it can't really get worse than that, I suppose. I actually think the thought process that people are probably going to go down here is, yeah, what does this do for Jerry Jeudy? What does this do for the tight ends? You know, people are kind of getting excited about Isaiah Bond, but you made it one really good point there that stuck with me, was about the mobility for Flacco, and, or should I say the lack of mobility for Joe Flacco, because he is such a pocket sloth at this stage. I mean, he's like 40, 40 whatever years old. He can't move, as you said. This was the thing last year in Indianapolis where, yeah, you know, some of those pass catchers kind of scammed production with Flacco, but their running game nosedived with when he was in there, because it just becomes so easy to defend the rushing attack when your quarterback is completely stationary like that. Yes. You saw this with Kirk Cousins early on last year coming off the Achilles in Atlanta. You saw this with Aaron Rodgers in New York coming off the Achilles in New York. Those run games were not as effective. The Falcons got better as the year went on, but especially the Jets, they really struggled. The Colts struggled with Flacco's lack of mobility because it just really limits what you can do from like a conceptual standpoint, like how often you can get under center. Flacco's under center a lot less this year than he was that one little magic year with the Browns in 2023. So I actually think that the real winner here could be Quinshon Judkins, right? Which is probably the guy that people care most about. If you can just run a functional offense and you can just get into some more layered and varied concepts from a run game perspective with Gabriel in there, that actually might help things out. And I don't know what your thoughts besides how tall he was on Dillon Gabriel from a prospect standpoint, but I don't know, to me, when I was kind of watching some Oregon last year, I kind of felt as if, you know, it looks like a guy that could maybe be a competent backup. I think it's just you spend a third round pick on a competent backup that looks like ugh. But I mean, at some point, that he could be at least like get help these guys get on base, if that makes sense.
I think here's going to be the tough part for Dillon Gabriel, and I think it has little to do with him and a lot to do with this poll. You see it right here. Who should the Browns start at quarterback over Flacco? Our YouTube chat, it's damn near 50-50. 51% Gabriel, 49% Shador. I think if Gabriel doesn't come out lights out, the rumblings and the grumblings for Sanders, I mean, it's going to start because he's one step away. Now, this is just such a fascinating thing. Do they go to number three? Do they bring somebody else in? Do they put Joe Flacco back in? I think Dillon Gabriel's in a really, really tough spot, a really tough spot.
You know, it's ironic, too, if, you know, the report from Adam Schefter that the Ravens wanted to draft Shador Sanders and he was like, nah, you know, because he didn't want to go to a spot where he was a long term backup. He might be getting ready to suit up for his first NFL start this week if he had just gone to Baltimore, that's kind of ironic considering we're talking about the Browns here. But yeah, I mean, my guess was that all these guys were going to get time this year because none of them are the future of the franchise, and they'll take their next quarterback in next year's draft. They have two first rounders there, them and Jacksonville's. I imagine they're looking for a quarterback then, but at the same time, I do think Dillon Gabriel can at least help the run game. So yeah, for fantasy purposes, that's kind of the one big takeaway. But we're going to stick on the Browns for my first data point here and flip it to the other side and actually have something nice to say about the Cleveland Browns here. The Browns defense, and this is what makes their pathetic offense all the more depressing, their defense has been lights out, particularly up front. Obviously, we know the pass rush is incredible, but their run defense has been incredibly productive so far. The Browns lead the NFL in early downs. That's first and second down. Rushing defensive success rate at 78.6%, opposing yards per carry at 2.6 yards per carry. They're the only team allowing negative yards before contact on average, 0.25 on early down. So first and second down, they're getting in the backfield on those runs. And they've played some pretty good run games so far. Obviously, week one, the Bengals, not really. But the Ravens, they've been definitely not as good this year again as a rushing team. They've been more, we're going to talk about that here in just a second, but it's still Derrick Henry. It's still Lamar Jackson. Week three, the Packers. Week four, the Lions. It's not as if they've been playing some cupcakes here. So the fantasy takeaway here is that this makes me a little bit nervous about Jordan Mason behind a banged up offensive line over there in London against this great Browns rushing defense, especially because we saw he is a game script sensitive back with Xavier Scott there, even with Aaron Jones on IR.
Man, I was watching the game and I'm like, who the hell is this Xavier Scott? Like, who is 36 out there on the field? But yeah, man, you look at what they did against Gibbs. And I know Gibbs had a dope fantasy day. He scored two touchdowns, but I think he averaged less than 3 yards an attempt. It was pretty bad for Gibbs, and he got all the volume. He was bell cow Jahmyr Gibbs, and he couldn't really find a lot of success versus this Browns defense. I mean, Baltimore, like you said, still Derrick Henry and Lamar. It's Josh Jacobs. It's Gibbs and Monty. And that was a Cincinnati offense that did have Joe Burrow on the field the entire game. So Chase Brown was out there and viable, true, man. The Cleveland is, it's a shame what's happening to the Browns, because I think this is a good football team. I think this team has the components to be a good team, but when you've got such a bad operation at quarterback. There's only so much the defense can do to keep you in games. But speaking of Jordan Mason, their upcoming opponents, you got Pittsburgh, Miami Dolphins upcoming. This is tough. Like, you got to think twice. Like, am I saying bench Mason? Would you bench Achane? Depends on what you got. But this is not one of those matchups where I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm starting any and everybody against the Browns. Hell no.
Yeah, especially considering how that Vikings offense looked last week. I know they ended up making the final score competitive, but Carson Wentz is just, he's Carson Wentz. He's going to take forever to get rid of the football. He has no pocket presence. I can't believe he's this deep in his career and he's still trying to do some of the stuff that he does in the pocket. It's pretty unbelievable. Any talk going into last week's game, and there was some, I was seeing some of the tweets early in that game about, oh yeah, they're just going to ride with Carson Wentz, put J.J. McCarthy on the bench. Give me a freaking break, bro. They're not about to pull out another Sam Darnold experience with old Carson Wentz on his sixth NFL team or whatever. I think this game could actually be a little bit close if this Browns defense is able to stop up the run. And with Ryan Kelly dealing with another concussion, Brian O'Neill's got an injury on the offensive line, Donovan Jackson is banged up. I have a lot of Jordan Mason teams, and we're doing the fear-mongering thing here. I'm probably still playing Jordan Mason, but I'm a little bit more nervous about it, just given the whole ecosystem there in Minnesota and certainly this matchup here against Cleveland. But you're right, man. It is a shame. I mean, I know Myles Garrett got the bag and, you know, he chose to do this, but God, I just wish he was playing anywhere else other than Cleveland. But he's got 40 plus million reasons to be happy the fact that he's wearing that Cleveland Browns jersey. I suppose. I don't know, Ray. Is money everything? I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. And you really nailed it, because if you didn't watch early in the morning, you might have missed the news. But the Vikings offensive line is just, they are hurting. McCarthy he's missing time at the right time right now, because I'm watching the game and I felt for Carson Wentz. I mean, he was under duress the entire game. I mean, just banged up, laying it on the line like a true backup quarterback veteran. You know, this might be tough sledding for what an interesting game. Dylan Gabriel and the Cleveland Browns versus Carson Wentz, Jordan Mason, and Justin Jefferson and the Minnesota Vikings, man. What the NFL is just the gift that keeps giving.
That it is, and you guys are going to be waking up early to watch that 9:30 a.m. Dylan Gabriel v. If Aaron Rodgers v. Carson Wentz at 9:30 a.m. Eastern didn't get your blood pumping, Dylan Gabriel maybe potentially versus Carson Wentz, maybe that can really get you going. My God, if it's Carson Wentz and Joe Flacco, that is just like the two biggest pocket slots I could possibly imagine starting a game over there in London. So congratulations, Europe. This is American football. Hope you love it. All right, we are going to take our first break of the show. When we come back, the king has maybe lost his crown. Derrick Henry and some concerning data points on him. That's coming up next, right after this quick break. All right, we are back. Let's talk something sad, something that hurts me deep down inside. And Ray Garvin, that is your second point here on Derrick Henry. I just want you to know, this is one of my favorite, I mean, not as this is some sort of hot take. Everybody loves Derrick Henry, but this is one of my favorite players in the NFL. You know, that's certainly not a wide receiver. This is one of my favorite players. So I'm going to try to steel myself here as you rattle off some of these stats.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. I've loved him since his time at Alabama when he was a backup running back. Hell, it took him 2 years to get on the field because he had to sit behind DeMarco Murray and the Deion. Neither here nor there. I'm concerned about Derrick Henry. My question to you and to the people in the chat is, Derrick Henry lost his crown. Is the king lost his crown? Week one versus Buffalo, he was phenomenal. 169 yards, 9.4 a carry, 3.6 yards before contact. Since that game against Buffalo, weeks two through four combined, he's got 31 carries, 115 yards, 1 yard before contact, and 2.3 yards after contact per carry. He didn't get it done versus Kansas City. And through four games, Henry ranks 31st in explosive play plus success rate, 44.9%. Amongst running backs with 20-plus touches, he is below league average at being successful and creating explosive plays out of the backfield. The three fumbles on just 43 touches this season for Derrick Henry, he had only three fumbles over his prior 652 touches over the past two seasons combined. Like, right now, this Baltimore's offensive line 29th in pressure rate allowed, 25th in stuff rate, 20.5%. League average is 17.3. Runs are being blown up at or behind the line of scrimmage in Baltimore. I am not an ageist, right? I'm not one of those guys that thinks just because the running back is 30 years old, he can't play, he can't perform. But man, it is tough to look at this situation, see what's happening with Lamar, and look at what's going on with this Baltimore rushing attack and not be pretty damn scared here going into week five about what we've gotten from Derrick Henry since week one.
I mean, absolutely. And I know the yards per carry is still rather high for Derrick Henry, but it's the stat that you threw out there, the 29th, I believe, or 31st in explosive play rate and yes. success rate. Because, yeah, that's something that I've been noticing all year is that their success rate as a team from a rushing standpoint is low, especially on early downs. Like, they're not getting in positive down and distance situations, which I think has lightly, you know, influenced some of the struggles that they've had as a passing team. And some of the times where you feel Lamar Jackson, and like, especially later in games, a little bit more frantic than usual, right? That's something to me happened in the Chiefs game, happened, I think, certainly at the end of the Lions game. He felt just a little bit less comfortable. And I think it's because of the offensive line worries, which, shout out to Charles McDonald. This is how football is so funny sometimes. Going into last season, I was the only one of the three of us that had the Ravens as a top 10 offense and on Football 301, because Charles was really worried, especially, and he hammered the point about the offensive line. He's like, yo, the three of us could start on that offensive line. And I think Football 301 actually has a good argument for being like the three biggest co-hosts among NFL podcasters, not counting people who played in the league. But we're not ready to suit up on the offensive line, let me tell you that, okay? So that was his just kind of evaluation of the offensive line. It wasn't a big issue last year. It's been a big problem this year. And yes. A lot of the same guys there as well. So I'm not really sure what to do with this information here, because I think I don't know how much of this is like a Derrick Henry issue, but he is still explosive. And I'm not sure if he's like washed or if he's declining or anything like that. That I'm less convinced of. But I think the rushing ecosystem, Ray, is really declining. And that almost doesn't make me feel any better, because this team is declining. The defense not being what it's going to be, that's going to take them out of the scripts that make Derrick Henry more comfortable. So what's your read on this situation? Like, if you had Derrick Henry from a fantasy, like on one of your fantasy teams, would you be looking to get out while there's still some name value, or would you try to just like ride whatever's left here?
This is tough, because I think I can justify both moves, right? Normally what we do in this situation is, oh, Lamar Jackson is out. Well, this offense continues to roll. They're just going to give Derrick Henry 30 touches a game and he'll carry the team. Well, he hadn't been able to carry the team alongside Lamar Jackson. Now you're talking about a team that's probably going to be facing some negative game script, because besides the Dallas Cowboys, this Baltimore Ravens defense is one of the stone worst in the NFL. There's injuries galore. Like, I don't know how you can be like, I think that they're going to just lean on him and he's going to be efficient. I think they're going to have a choice but to try and do that. But the offensive line issues still exist. And now you insert a quarterback in Cooper. I'm man-to-man coverage across the board. We're not doing it. I'm sending pressure to ass, and I'm making you make Cooper Rush beat us. And I'm daring you to have Cooper Rush beat us. I think schematically, this is tough for a team that was already playing bad football. Like, this isn't last year's Ravens. The team was already struggling, and now you take away their greatest offensive threat? This is tough. This is tough. I don't even know what you asked the question, Matt. I'm concerned.
Yeah, I have Derrick Henry on a couple fantasy teams, and I might think about seeing like if there's like what the market is from a trade perspective. It's probably not great, because everybody has access to the information that we have. You know, Lamar Jackson, they know he's out. They've seen some of the results so far, but he has at least had some usable fantasy performances. And I wonder if that might be enough to maybe just take Derrick Henry to market and see what happens. Basically, any time a fantasy analyst has gotten behind a microphone and said, like, this might be the time to start fading Derrick Henry, it's been right. Absolutely the wrong advice. So I am very aware that I just set myself to look like a dumbass in 3 weeks. But hey, man, it's more of the ecosystem than Derrick Henry himself.
Listen, and if I end up looking like a dumbass because I'm evaluating what's happening on the football field, then I'll look like a dumbass a lot more times. Right now, Ravens aren't playing well. I'm not telling you to dump Derrick Henry. I'm not telling you it's over. I'm just telling you the outlook right now, it's tough to see the light at the end of the tunnel with what's happened right now. And that's what I'm going to do until I leave this earth, is analyze football, and that's what's happening.
Hey, let's talk about do a little analyzation on a guy who is trending up, a young player in this league. Flip it around here for my second data point. Drake May is really on the rise here. Drake, I don't know about, man, whoa, Drake May has been elite. I don't know who greenlit that on the lower third here. Let's slow it down here. But you know what? Maybe they looked at the stats. Maybe the producers looked at the stats and said, hey, Harmon, actually believe what you're saying here. Drake May is second in success rate right now, behind only the great Daniel Jones, I guess, who is also elite based on the success rate metrics. Not the only thing that's good, though. He is ninth in EPA added on scrambles, is Drake May, so the rushing element has been there for him. He is fourth in success rate on pure passing plays alone. So, again, get it done on the ground, get it done through the air. Drake May has done it. But, Ray, I think the question here is how much of this is because of the matchups? Because through 4 weeks, we've had a game against the Raiders. We've had a game in Miami against the Dolphins. We've had a game against Pittsburgh and a game against the Carolina Panthers. I think all four of those defenses aren't very good. The Steelers may be a little bit better than the other three, but they still have areas that you can absolutely pick on. Drake May leads the NFL in completion percentage right now. I think the accuracy for Drake May has been good. The decision-making has still been a little hit or miss. He'll still sometimes take a bad sack. He'll put the ball in harm's way. We can't do that forever. We got to get those out of his game at some point, but certainly from a fantasy standpoint, he's been a big win as a quarterback right now. And overall, like, he's actually checking the production boxes. So what do we think about Drake May's outlook rest of season? And especially as he faces a Bills defense that has its issues, but is probably better than some of those four in week five.
Drake May's been outstanding. Drake May's been outstanding. Would I go as far as to say he is elite? Not yet, but he's playing like an elite fantasy football scorer at the position. Like, he's played really well. Do I think that some of it was due to the fact that he faced off against some pretty bad or struggling defenses? Yes, but I also believe that there's this thing called confidence that carries over. And we talked about Derrick Henry and how much he struggled. As great as he's been, it looks like the confidence is shaken. Drake May, it looks like his confidence is sky high. And that type of confidence and belief that you can go out there and get it done at the most important position in football, I'm not afraid of this Bills matchup at all. I thought Spencer Rattler did fine enough against Buffalo. Like, you know, they were 15.5-point dogs in that game. Spencer Rattler kept it interesting at times. And Drake May is a much superior prospect and a much superior quarterback and player. I think the big development and the thing that is truly helping May, it's not even the rushing attack. It is the fact that it looks like there's a connection growing between he and a veteran wide receiver. So if that can continue to happen, he and Diggs continue to click, he's got Hunter Henry at tight end and the threat of his legs. Yeah, Harmon, Drake May probably a lot better. And one of those quiet, he's kind of going under the radar because of some other, I mean, we spent 20 minutes talking about Dylan Gabriel, but Drake May has been elite-ish so far. And I think he continues, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. I talked about this earlier this week that Stephon Diggs last week did seem to take a pretty big step forward, ran a season high in terms of route percentage, just over 81% there in week number four. And it wasn't as if I saw Stephon Diggs doing anything, you know, crazy out there. We know that he is a veteran player deeper into his career, but just finding the soft spots in a very admittedly soft Panthers defense. But like, that's why you bring in Steph Diggs, is because he helped Josh Allen adjust to being like a consistent starting quarterback. And again, he's not going to be that same elite player here for the Patriots, but Diggs made a comment about he's only about like 5 out of 10 in terms of comfort level in the offense, which Mike Vrabel was get asked about that later this week. And he's like, 5 out of 10, we got to get that higher. So that's just like those two personalities together are very interesting to me. As with most things with Stephon Diggs, it's probably not a long-term relationship, but hopefully it burns bright here while it burns. But yeah, that was, I think, a pretty pretty big development here for Drake May. That's going to help in terms of the consistency, because then otherwise, you know, Hunter Henry has given them some good moments this year. Your guy, Kayshon Booty, I think is settled in at that X receiver spot. I don't see him losing his job necessarily. We still have a lot of Mac Hollins. There's like Austin Hooper, you know, the run game is what it is. Kyle Williams did see a bump up in terms of route percentage, just 27%. Pop Douglas, he's out of there. I think they kind of are settling in the room that they want, you know? And so I actually think you could look at that and say that, yes, the matchups have been what they have been, but the best could be yet to come for Drake May if these guys continue to coalesce around him.
Nailed it. You know, they're trying to figure out what the offense is going to look like. Are we throwing vertically to the X receiver, which you said, Boutte is out there. Pop Douglas was running more in the slot weeks one, weeks two, but they're kind of like, you're out of the way now, Diggs, you're going to do that. Like they had to figure out what works well for Drake May. And now that I think this is what it is, Matt. I think it's Diggs in that role. Boutte, you're parked out there. There's going to be a sprinkling of Mac. I think that's how they want to play football. And it's frustrating and annoying for us for fantasy when you've got those ancillary pieces. But we're here talking about Drake May. Mm-hmm. I think it's good for Drake May. I think this is really good for Drake May. And Will Campbell, I know he played really well last week as well. So you continue to get your left tackle, your number four overall pick going. Whether he's elite now or not, like this is somebody that you were 1,000%. Like I'm not even scared of the matchup. I'm playing Drake May week in and week out.
Oh, 100%. I also thought this was interesting, a stat from Datorama that good follow on Twitter, by the way. Patriots running backs through 4 weeks of football, according to Fantasy Points data. Ramondre, 6.5% explosive rushing rate. That's 15th out of 42 running backs. Travion Henderson, 0% explosive rushing rate. That's dead last among running backs. Like Ramondre, people want him out of there. I know he's got the fumbles, but he's had some moments this year. They're not a consistent rushing game, but that's at least brought like an explosive play potential for Ramondre Stevenson. So I don't think he's going anywhere necessarily. Again, the run game overall needs to be better. I agree that Will Campbell has been really good this year, but probably better pass protector than a run blocker so far. But overall, I've been really impressed with Campbell. This is a situation that I really like what Drake May is into right now. I think this is a good spot for him. But let's get into your next data point here, Ray.
Oh, boy. You know, they say you're never wrong. You're just a week early. And I told everybody last week, you don't start any of those Eagles receivers and then they go off. This week, I'm like, start them all. And then it was back to the same old stuff that we kind of saw. And I think Hurts is a problem. I mean, he's a true problem for this wide receiver room. He started off great versus Tampa Bay, 15 for 16, 130 yards, 2 touchdowns to Goddard. But they became only the only game in the last 2 years where a team did not complete a pass in the second half. Like, Matt, I don't know how we can confidently tell people you just start your Eagles receivers every week. Like I don't know what to do. I'm truly at a loss because the player that it doesn't hurt is Hurts. He's fine. He's great. He's going to score fantasy points regardless. In the damning thing of it all is they're still winning. They're winning in spite of their winning an awful passing game has distracted all the people from how bad Saquon Barkley has been because he's been awful too. Had he not gotten into the end zone every damn week? But he's earned good credit. You ran for 3,000 yards last year. We'll let you be sorry, Saquon, and we won't say anything.
Do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want because he ain't been good either. But the real thing here, man, is what do you do with A.J. Brown, who is now reading from the book of Mark with cryptic tweets, you know, if they don't want me, just release me, let me go. Father, now you got Smith. I don't know, man. I don't. What do you do with them?
Okay, I got a couple more stats to throw your way on this, and I'm sure the producers hate me for bringing up stats that I didn't send in before the show. Okay, so Sam Hoppen pointed this out on Twitter today. The Eagles' offense currently leads the NFL in 3-and-out rate. Nobody is going 3-and-out at a higher rate than the Philadelphia Eagles, who, as you pointed out, are 4-and-freaking-0. That has to be like the first time that's happened. I can't imagine there's ever been a team on planet Earth that has gone 3-and-out at the highest rate in the NFL and is unfreaking defeated. Saquon Barkley, I'm glad you brought this up. Saquon Barkley, among running backs with 50 plus carries, there has been 23 of them that have had 50 plus carries this year. Would you like to guess where he ranks in terms of yards per carry among those 23 backs, Ray Garvin?
I'm not going to disrespect him, so he's still inside the top 15. I'm going to go 14th.
Oh, no, disrespect away, brother. He's 22nd. Only one worse is Chase Brown at 1.8 yards per carry, 2.6 yards per carry for Saquon Barkley. Now, to your point about the fantasy stuff, I mean, the guy ahead of him is Christian McCaffrey at 2.9. So he's, I mean, still smoking on those pass catching duties. But nevertheless, Saquon, long run of 13 yards so far this year. That is a guy that was just ripping off explosives left and right. What's going on in the rushing game? I'm glad that you pointed that out, because that has gone very, very under discussed. And because the box score has been there, it's been fine. But I am very concerned about the Eagles passing game. And you want to know why I'm the most concerned, Ray? AJ Brown is reading the books, or he's sharing the cryptic tweets. I don't think he's playing that well right now. You know, I watched him. I've been charting him. I think he looks significantly worse than he did last year. And I don't know if that's lingering effects from offseason injuries, or if he's just disengaged and unhappy with what's going on right now. But, you know, he got 9 targets last week, and some of those were not great looking targets from our buddy Jalen Hurts there. But, and I do think the Bucs defense actually played well, but yeah, they were sticking to him in man coverage in that game. I mean, their corners were in his hip pocket on a lot of these like in breaking routes. And this is the guy that was the best receiver against man coverage that I charted last season, the best receiver against man coverage. And I think he's struggling to separate right now. So this is like again, they're 4-0. It's insane. You know, Eagles coaches are having to answer questions about what's wrong with this, what's wrong with that. We're pointing out all these things wrong, and they're 4-0. But yeah, from a fantasy standpoint, I'm seeing multiple problems here in Philadelphia. Which one do you think like actually could get fixed here, or like where do we go?
I'm being very honest with you. I think the reason why it has been contained so far is because they're 4-0. It's because they're 4-0. Once they if they're losing, and the captain, the guy number 11 with the C on his chest, he's not getting the ball. Devonta Smith, another $100 million man, he's not getting the ball. Saquon's not running well. Like this feels like a ticking time bomb, because it's not like the running portion of the offense is going well. Saquon is kind of scamming his way to production because he's catching a few more out of the backfield this year. I think this is a real, real problem. The one that I think can be fixed the easiest is just try to get AJ Brown the ball right away, quick game, get it out. I think that can be fixed. But to your point, if he has, which it absolutely is a possibility, taken a little bit of a step back, might there be a reason why he's not able to convert some of these? This situation just seems very, very volatile. And everybody's like, just trade AJ Brown. I don't know why the Eagles would do that. I think he's got 2 years left on the deal. He definitely is a threat out there schematically. This is tough. This one is tough. Send him to play with Drake May in New England. Reunite him with Mike Vrabel, who didn't want to trade him there in the first place. Let's get Drake May a proper
X. That's right.
Matt Harmon, get him a proper X to go along with Stephon Diggs, right?
That would be pretty exciting. But to your point, though, I don't think the Eagles have any incentive to do that unless he becomes such a problem, you know, then maybe they think about it and maybe they try to cash in. But while, like we just talked about with Derrick Henry, they try to cash in while the name value is still there. Because here's what's not happening. There's not a bunch of GMs that are dialing up AJ Brown, you know, week 4 routes and be like, does AJ Brown still look good? No, some team owner will be like, hey, the Eagles, they're putting AJ Brown on the trade block. We got an offensive problem. Let's go trade for old AJ Brown over there. Like, somebody will do that deal, but I do think he'd have to become a huge problem in order for that to happen. Because I saw a quote from Kevin Petullo, the offensive coordinator today, said that again, they're being berated about questions with the passing offense while they're 4-0, which must be super fun to be an Eagles coach right now. We're winning games, people. What are we doing? But Kevin Petullo said that, you know, yeah, sometimes, well, for a lot of our plays, I'm paraphrasing here. Yeah, when he's the backside guy, you know, and we don't get to him in the progression, then it, the number that's fine because it means that other guys are in rhythm, which number one, not true because nobody's been in rhythm on this team. But also that sends like alarm bells to me. Who is just talking about their number one wide receiver is, oh yeah, he's the backside guy. If we get to him in progressions, you know, that sends like signals to me that they're not seeing a player that they want to prioritize right now. Even if, yes, he still dictates coverage and people have to account for him when he's out there, which is true. But that quote, just maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that even seemed a little bit alarm belly to me.
There are reasons to be alarmed. I don't think you're not reading too much into it. Everybody is saying, Matt, here's what I know. Here's what I know, man. And this is a great show. We put in a lot of work here on this data dump program to give the people this content, right? We ain't the only people who see this, right? Like, we're not the only people who know these stats. Somebody in that building knows this as well, right? And they've got to try to do something because this is a problem, man. This is a problem. And you better believe that somewhere inside of that building, inside of that operation in the game plan, like, they're trying to figure something out. But man, when you're between the white lines and the X's and O's break down, like, Hurts is going to do what Hurts has always done, which is run the damn football. Like, he's just going to run it. Like, I'm going to run it. I don't see you there. Why are they talking about? There's something going on there, but they're 4-0. So as long as they continue to win, I bet you it'll stay suppressed a little bit, but the rumblings are here.
Let's get to a wide receiver who is producing for my third data point here. Michael Pittman, Colts wide receiver Michael Pittman, is tied with George Pickens for third among wide receivers in first down targets. I like to look at targets on first downs because it just sort of shows you again, who is the priority here? Who are we trying to get the football into their hands? The Colts are trying to get the football in Michael Pittman's hands. Current leaders in terms of targets on first downs, it's Puka Nacua, who's balling out of control with 20. Malik Nabers, 18, second in the NFL. Then it's Michael Pittman and George Pickens tied for third at 17. I mean, he has been the guy on early downs. He's the primary read for this Colts offense. You can see it. Nobody's throwing to their first read at a higher percentage than Daniel Jones, which, by the way, that's not an insult to Daniel Jones or trying to take anything away from him. It's a, hey, this offense is well run stat. He's getting the ball out to that first read. He's trying to hit that thing. And a lot of times that's Michael Pittman, who has been open, who's been consistent, who's where he needs to be. And this week he goes up against a Raiders defense that is second in yards allowed to outside receivers. So he's had some tougher spots, but also some easy spots so far to start the season as Michael Pittman. This is a spot where you did not draft this guy to be a fantasy starter. You may have had him, you may have been sitting, you know, AJ Brown or somebody like that, and Michael Pittman's been blowing up on your bench. This looks like a week here with the stats he's been accumulating, the usage he's been accumulating, and the matchup to get Michael Pittman into lineups this week.
Man, this is such a great under the radar data point this week because I track usage, right? My whole tool, Trusted Trinity, I track usage. I hadn't even looked at the Colts coming out of week four. So as you're talking, I pulled it up. I mean, 7.1 Trinity score, which puts him ahead of usage-wise. It's ahead of players like Chris Olave, Jalen Waddle, Zay Flowers, DK Metcalf, Cortland Sutton, and the aforementioned George Pickens. Higher than that, and I'm looking at how this usage is equating to fantasy points. This is a sneaky, under-the-radar, just bona fide, like, early stud, especially drafting him damn near outside the top 50 wide receivers. I mean, this is Pittman's been good. He's been better than good. He's been better than what you drafted him to be. And part of that is the offense. It's Daniel Jones. And then you're talking about week five versus this Raiders defense that I just saw they made many of wide receivers look like studs versus them over the first quarter of this season. Man, this is a good pull. This is a good pull. This is one of those guys where you might be able to trade and get him and something else for a bigger name or for a name that may not be producing as much. Like, Pittman is such a good pull right here. And, you know, I think we talked about him in the beginning of the season, just kind of being what he is. He's just going to be like, he's ascended from that. And maybe all it took was some competent quarterback play. And we got that from Daniel Jones, wouldn't you know?
I mean, man, yeah, that's the thing is I just didn't see the quarterback play coming. That's why I didn't have any of these Colts wide receivers ranked super highly this year. I think the highest one that I had was Josh Downs prior to that hamstring injury that he had later in training camp. Then you kind of have to dock him a little bit there. But and it made me sad to I tweeted this today that it does look like we've had to completely sacrifice any Josh Downs production to get Michael Pittman like a bounce back season for Michael Pittman here, which again is unfortunate because I love Josh Downs. I remember doing the year two or the breakout wide receiver show with you, the first show you did with us in the offseason, yep. And we talked about Josh Downs. Everybody knows I love Josh Downs. I think he's a baller, and I think he will have days at some point. I know it's just been so slow. I think he'll have days at some point, but Michael Pittman is the guy right now. And again, like you said, he's getting the usage, and I want to always point this out that Michael Pittman, as we're showing on the screen right now, from a reception perception standpoint, to 2021 to 2023, he was just a straight up baller. Right around 74% success rate versus man coverage. In 2023, 74.8%. That's 80th percentile. Three straight years over 80% success rate versus zone, and then 93rd percentile success rate versus press. He's not like a downfield burner. You know, he is definitely kind of limited to the short to underneath areas. But yeah, he's a guy that I think people gave up on in Dynasty. I was definitely like kind of bumping him down my Dynasty rankings slowly. Now I'm thinking I may be overcorrected here and should have just kind of bet on the talent, especially for a guy that was coming off of, like, he just had his season ruined last year by a back injury. You know, he's a warrior. He went out there and he played for a team that he's dedicated to. But I mean, damn, dude, he's playing extremely well. Just so awesome against zone coverage right now, in particular. And Danny Dimes is putting the football on him. So yeah, I'm gonna call it right now. I'm calling it to you on the show. We do the damn bold predictions every week. Michael Pittman, top 10 wide receiver. That's gonna be my bold prediction for the week. I hope that's bold enough for the people out there. But that is gonna be mine in the article there.
Man, you already got ahead of your job, man. You just, I'm like, hell, as we're talking to you, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna steal this and use this. And you already claimed it. So there you go. No, that's a really good call. Good pull.
Yeah, that's a pro move right there. All right. On that note, we are going to take a quick break. And while we're in the break, I'm going to write that in the bold predictions doc so that it's claimed, so that Joel or Scott or Boone or one of these other knuckleheads can't go in there and steal it from me. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have more stats that you need to know for week 5 right after this. All right, we are back. Ray, we were talking during the break that we've had some negative data points, you know, the fear mongering, as the YouTube chat likes to say. We're about to get a positive Ray Garvin stat right here. So let's hear it. Let's get some positivity from
you.
Let's go.
Let's get the energy up. Let's be positive. Let's be positive because we finally got to see Xavier Worthy play football, and it paid off, and it was right on time for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I talked about the running game being a problem over the past couple of weeks, mongering that fear. It's still a problem. Xavier Worthy led the team in damn rushing. So that is a problem. But what he did on the outside this week, let's go. Only 29 routes. That is it for Xavier Worthy, which was 30th on the week. It was below the average wide receiver on the week, right? But he still was efficient. 9th in the NFL in air yards, 3rd in average depth of target, first downs per route run, 17.2%. 6th best in the NFL coming out of week 4, yards per route run 2.8, 10th best on the week, target rate of 27%, top 12 on the week. 66% of his snaps, Matt Harmon, you know where they came? He's aligned on the outside. They parked him outside and said, you're getting down the field. We're not even putting you in traffic. We're not putting you in harm's way. And they aired it out to Xavier Worthy. Like he said after the game, once I got hit and got up and knew that I was okay, it was just playing football now. Like, this is as positive of a debut that we had to wait. Delayed gratification. Sometimes you got to be patient, but this is coming right on time because they needed it in the worst way. Now, I did say Tyquan Thornton wasn't droppable, and he's caught one pass for a touchdown, but now you can drop him. His role got reduced to rubble with Xavier Worthy back. Great stash. Thank you for your contributions. But like, looking at this offense and the lack of explosiveness, what they needed, like, they weren't playing. That offense was really going through Xavier Worthy. And moving forward. Like, this is the Chiefs team they're not coasting to an AFC West title, right? They're not just coasting to another. No one's given up, what, 9 straight, 10 straight without a fight? Like, this is as positive as you can get. And with Rashee Rice's return right around the corner, like, you want to see Worthy establish himself some more so his role is still consistent even when Rice gets back. But, man, Matt, I know you wanted to see this. I wanted to see it. We have to be pleased with what we got from Worthy and what I'll say kind of limited duty, only 29 routes.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Sub 80% route participation. That's a guy that could definitely go up from here. Yeah, I saw a lot of things to get me excited about Xavier Worthy, because the number one thing for me coming out of his rookie season was I think he was a good zone coverage receiver, and he was open down the field. But when they tried to get those shots to him, it just wasn't effective. Like, it wasn't consistent. Unlocking him as a vertical threat, it wasn't there, right? But in this game, he had 2 catches for over 40 yards against man coverage down the football field. That's important. Against man coverage, he had a 20 air yards per target mark overall. Like, I get it that people got excited from a fantasy standpoint, you know, late in the season, even into the playoffs, in this kind of short, create a touch, gadgety role for Xavier Worthy. But guess what, gang? Like, that's not the best use for him. It's the targets. That's good. I get it. And he can still win on some of those quick out routes. That's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about more of like the screens and swing passes and stuff like that. Because guess what? This is a 160-something pound wide receiver who's already been lit up once this year and had to miss multiple games. We don't want him in that underneath area taking those big hits. We want him with wide open space down the field making those big catches. So to see that, to me, in his first game of the season, first real game of the season, that was big, because that's how this guy is going to make a difference for the Chiefs and I think make a difference for your fantasy teams.
And Mahomes is playing pretty good ball. I mean, the fact that he kept that thing offensively afloat with Tyquan Thornton, with Hollywood Brown, who that week one was definitely just the game plan was wrecked, just throw it to him. They're not getting a ton from Travis Kelce. The running game is still a problem. So the best thing that can happen for this offense is for them to get Worthy comfortable in his role, because you would probably agree with me, Matt. Rashee Rice and Worthy are going to have 2 different roles in this offense. So what they need to do, just get him comfortable doing his thing, because when Rice comes back, it's probably going to nuke all those Juju targets who's still involved. He's still involved, but get Worthy comfortable running his allotment of routes, playing his game. Like, this is, I am very, very bullish on this offense, despite the fact that it's struggling so much right now to run the football. This, as a Chiefs fan, big win at home, home dogs, and you get Xavier Worthy healthy in and out of the game. This is positive momentum building for the Chiefs offense.
Oh, yeah. This is exactly, to your point, the role I wanted to see from him. Because, yeah, I think Rashee Rice is going to stay contained in his original role. He's going to be that zone beater underneath. So you need a man coverage element, and you need somebody to sting down the football field. Xavier Worthy, 136 air yards on limited routes last week. That was 9th among all wide receivers in week 4, ahead of Justin Jefferson, just behind only the great Quentin Johnston. So we're talking about two of the best wide receivers in the league, QJ and Justin Jefferson, and Xavier Worthy is sandwiched between those two guys. I'm saying that tongue in cheek, but QJ's been putting in the box score, baby. He's been doing it. And the film is good too, but and so I think the film was good for Xavier Worthy. He's somebody that impressed me, and I like to see the role this past week. So what do you think about this matchup in Jacksonville this week? I mean, I think you're playing Xavier Worthy if you got him, but that Jags defense has actually been pretty good to start the season. They've been playing with some heat.
Hey, that Jags team, despite some stuff offensively, they're not a bad program. That's not a bad football team at all. I think this is going to be a much tougher task. I mean, their pass rush is tough. Jacksonville can run the ball. They've got a good squad over there in Duval County. So yeah, that's. But I'm playing Worthy, man. Here's my thing with Worthy. Honestly, yeah. I waited so long to be able to plug him into a starting spot. Like, I'm not letting him get hurt again with him being on my bench. You're just gonna play. Like, too much upside, too much boom potential. And they do run him. Like, he's getting a carry or two a game. Xavier Worthy. So I'm rolling with X.
Xavier Worthy wasn't the only wide receiver that we saw return to the NFL field. For my fourth stat here coming out of week four, Buccaneers wide receivers with no Mike Evans, but with the return of Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin is back. And unlike Xavier Worthy, I think Chris Godwin returned to a role that I was not really expecting here. Number one, we saw Emeka Ibuka lead the team in routes, 41 routes run, drew 10 targets. No surprises there. He's the guy. I think he's established. He's the guy. That wasn't shocking to me. Was a little shocking that there were no restrictions on Chris Godwin in his return to action. He had the second highest route participation on the team at 93%, behind only Emeka Ibuka. He was also targeted 10 times as well, but that even wasn't the most interesting part of this. Chris Godwin only lined up in the slot on 29.1% of his snaps in his week four return to action. He averaged a whopping 14.6 air yards per target. To put that into context, last year during his badass career best 7-game stretch to start 2024, he was at a 61.5% slot rate, 5.74 air yards per target. So big shift in the slot rate, big shift in where he was targeted on the field, a lot of deep developing routes there, which is very different than his usage last year. I wonder, Ray, how sticky you think this is, because Sterling Shepard, my buddy Sterling Shepard, and fellow rookie wide receiver Tez Johnson were the slot guys, both of them at 49 and 41% respectively. Do we think Godwin has a new role in this offense with Josh Grizzard taking over from Liam Cohen, or does he go back to the slot when Mike Evans returns and settles back into that X receiver position?
I don't know. Because this was fascinating. And if I'm not mistaken, he and Ibuka, the numbers were eerily similar. It's like they both played the same role in that offense. You just had the young bull that was just much better, much more productive. But I look at Godwin's usage. There was no limitations, man. Just get out there. You're running down the field. I'm throwing it to you down the field, and you're going to get 10 targets. He had, what, one less route than Ibuka? Ibuka had 41 routes. I believe Godwin was right at 40. I mean, this was shocking, because I just auto-assumed when I looked at the advanced data, he would have been 60, 70% in the slot. But that was not the case. And then you have to just stop for a second and be like, yo, this is a different offense, right? Like, it's not the Liam Cohen offense. Mm-hmm. Like, the Chris Godwin role that we grew accustomed to over the past couple of years, that role no longer exists in Tampa Bay. Godwin is still there, but schematically, often you don't think that OC is going to put his own stamp on his offense? Think he wants to be Liam Cohen's lapdog? I'm just picking up with Liam Cohen. No, this is my offense, and this is what we want to do. Like, we're going to push the ball downfield. Does it remain the same when Mike Evans is in? You know what, Matt? Here's what I think that the answer to that question is. They're probably taking it week by week. Hell, they don't even know if they have Chris Godwin in 2 weeks, right? Mike Evans, I think they're just taking it week by week, and it will be curious to see what they do with Big Mike when he comes back on the field, because he's a big wide receiver that can run on the inside. I don't know, but from a fantasy perspective, I've been pretty anti receivers coming off major injury, which means Chris Godwin was in that group for me. You got to be happy about what you saw, even though production didn't line up. Usage doesn't always equal production. But it was clear. It was like those two guys. And I believe, I'm almost positive, if you add up the route participation for every other pass catcher not named Godwin, Ibuka, or Bucky Irving, it was like nothing there. No Cade Otton. I think Sterling Shepard got a few. No Tez Johnson. It was just those guys at the top, so still consolidated.
Well, from a route perspective, Cade Otton was out there, but you might have not noticed it because he never gets the football thrown his way.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, he actually had the same amount of routes as Chris Godwin. But, yeah, Sterling Shepard, these guys, they're all, like, sub 80%. So it was very concentrated from a target perspective between Ibuka and Chris Godwin. But, yeah, I thought it was really curious, this role for Godwin, because I've said this a lot about this offense, and I do think they've kept some of the bones similar from Cohen to Grizzard, but Grizzard's definitely putting some different wrinkles in it. And I don't know if it's been great so far in terms of some of the changes. I think actually probably would have been better to just settle on what Cohen had done last year. But they do still blur the lines between what is and is not a slot receiver. You saw this a lot with Jalen McMillan last year where they would have him in full speed motion. It's like, okay, he starts the play here, but he runs like an outside receiver route, which allows Mike Evans to run these big over routes where he's almost kind of a big slot receiver, essentially, even though like Mike Evans is designated as the X. You know, again, they blur the lines with what they do here. So, but still, I went back and watched his game, and there's a lot of reps where Godwin is just an outside receiver running vertical routes, and it didn't look that good. I mean, which it's not to be expected there. I mean, he's coming off a major injury. It might take him all year. It might take him till 2026 to feel comfortable. But I'm definitely interested to see if, because I'm even though the usage was there, I'm not like, based on the results and the lack of slot targets and the vertical routes and the way the film looked, I'm not like jacked up to play Chris Godwin this upcoming week against a Seattle defense that's been awesome so far this year. So I think I'm still kind of in discovery mode with the Chris Godwin thing. And I would like to see him kind of return to a power slot role once Mike Evans gets back and reassumes the X receiver spot.
Yeah. Mike ain't going to be back for a minute though, right? What's he out? 3 games, 4 games?
I don't think they put him on IR, so it'll be like 3 games or so.
At this point, for me, here's how I look at this. You got Baker Mayfield. They're going to throw the ball. There's nobody else. And when we know it's concentrated, I'm not this big Godwin proponent, but if I had Godwin on a fantasy roster, which I'm in a few, to see him go out there and command 10 targets right out the gate, hell, I'm praying some other players just get 5 targets in a game, 6 targets. Like, if you're going to get thrown the ball that much, like, you're probably in a lineup. Like, let's just be real.
Yeah, fair point. And sometimes these game scripts where you're behind, and the Bucks were behind in this game for a large portion of it, it can kind of make things a little bit weird. So I don't want to overreact. That's a good point. I want to overreact to just a 1-game sample here on Chris Godwin. But we're sticking on slot corner here actually for the next couple of ones, including your fifth and final data point here, Ray Garvin.
Oh man, it might be the skeleton key, Matt. We're talking about alignment, positional versatility. Well, in week 4, one Drake London, who had an amazing fantasy output in week 4, wide receiver 1.5 PPR points from the slot, 16.6 points of players who receive the minimum of 5 slot targets. And I know it can get tricky. What's a slot? Well, he was lined up and targeted from the slot. Led all wide receivers in slot air yards with 89, finished first in first downs per route run over Josh Downs, Matthew Golden, Chris Godwin, Wandell Robinson, and some other guys who were targeted from the slot position. 7.36 yards per route run from the slot. It wasn't good. That was great. Like, Drake London played 63% of his snaps in week 4 from the slot, opposed to 36% out wide. And getting that big body inside with two-way goes, two-way releases, I had somebody that I trust very much in the scouting community text me after week 3 saying, man, Drake needs some help. He's having some difficulty on the outside, completely unrelated to everything that happened in week 4. And then I don't know if he talked to Zach Robinson, but moving Drake London on the inside in week 4, I text that same scout back and I was like, man, he's balling out today. Like, look at the release options that he has. Look at how he can use his size from the inside. Like, we saw this happen, and it was an embarrassing performance from the Carolina Panthers, from the Falcons versus the Panthers the week prior. So to see this offense get going, it looked like Penix was a lot more comfortable targeting London on some of those slot route concepts. Like, I want to see more of this. I want to see more of Drake London being that, what we talk about Godwin, that big power slot from the interior. Like, I think they can do some more of this in Atlanta, and that would be very, very good for a player that, Matt, I don't know if you saw it, there's some people kind of wavering. They were wavering on Drake London going into week 4, but I think all of those concerns, all of those concerns have now been dissipated. Just a little waver, not big, just a little waver.
Oh, buddy, trust me. I saw it. I was way over my skis on Drake London heading into this year. I was like, oh yeah, I would take him end of the first round. Bold prediction. He could be the wide receiver 1 overall. He could be triple crown winner. I was there, man. So if anybody was hearing it about what the hell is going on with Drake London? It was your boy, okay? I was well aware of some of the concerns about Drake London.
Well, you got to feel good. And I love him too, man. You see the USC helmet in the back. I love him too, Matt Harmon. But my Drake London brother, we got to feel good about this, right? Because something, isn't it kind of the thing?
Yes.
Like, we're into week five now, and we can make some more definitive bets, but by and large, man, it was almost like a lot of these teams are just figuring it out, right? It's like trying to figure out how we're going to use this player, what role they're going to serve. And I'm hoping, Matt, fingers crossed, man, that they continue to use him on the inside. Like, he can do what Cortland Sutton does from the slot and probably at a higher clip. Let Drake London be positioned. Let him versatile in the offense, man.
Yeah, I was going back and looking at this last year because a big part of the Drake London unlocking last year was the fact that they moved him around the formation, the fact they got him these slot reps. And I remember going back and forth. I just refound this conversation again, you know, because obviously Zach Robinson came from the Rams coaching tree and everything like that. Somebody replied to one of the tweets that I sent. I was like, sometimes it's stupid to do this, you know, this player in this role. But Drake London was basically playing the Puka Nacua role in this offense where he's moving around. He's getting some of those, like, he's not a slot-only player, but he's getting intentional usage from the slot is the best way to put it. And it didn't feel like that at all through the first 3 weeks. And it's so funny sometimes because, you know, it's small samples. And I was talking with Nate Tice about this today on 301. I don't want to be so stupid to think like, oh, Zach Robinson listens to the show. But Nate and I were literally talking last week about how they didn't use enough play action. Michael Penix, first game over 20% play action rate in week four. Okay. They didn't push the ball deep enough. Michael Penix, 10.5 air yards per target in week four, highest of the season. Drake London is not getting the slot usage. He's not getting moved around. Drake London, all the slot usage you're talking about here. So it's funny. Sometimes, like, we can see these things, and then it happens. And that doesn't always work out that way, obviously. But this was one where it was kind of obvious to see what the issues were, and it played out in week four. Like, hey, this is how you can really get Penix and Drake London going.
100%. And it worked. And I am hopeful. And something else that's good that's happening, he's got a stud running back in Bijan, who's just phenomenal right now. And Kyle Pitts, when we finally stop talking about Kyle Pitts, he becomes a decent player. They're getting some production from another pass catcher in Kyle Pitts, because Mooney he feels like the one that's kind of left out right now. I really do like Darnell Mooney. I think he's a good player, but we're getting production from Kyle Pitts. Like, I think this offense can work. And if they continue to do some of the things that we saw in week four, Matt, because this was an obvious one. There were some things that they needed to do schematically to make things more explosive, easier, use some of this versatility, man. This was just good to see. Good to see.
Kyle Pitts slapped that senior on the back of his jersey, and ever since, he's been playing like a grown-ass man, so that's good to see. Speaking of a pass catcher who's got the senior on the back of his jersey, my final stat point of the week, Deebo Samuel Sr. here, up there in Washington. I did not realize this until going through the box score for last week's game against these Atlanta Falcons. Deebo has been playing a ton out of the slot this year. So this is Deebo Samuel's slot rate by season. 2019, 20.4%. 2020, 28.9%. 2021, 24.8%. 2022, 22.1%. 2023, 28.3%. This year in 2025, 69.9% here in 2025. That is very interesting to me, right? Because that's a big change in usage. I skipped one of the years here. It's 2025. He's 69.9% with the Washington Commanders. And here, in the last 2 weeks with Terry McLaurin kind of in and out of the lineup, and then he misses week four, he's still over 50% playing in the slot. And this is why this is important, Ray, because I think last year, Deebo has always not been that good against man coverage, like even during his best years, right? But he's never been a slot-only player. He's been mostly an outside guy, but he's just moved around in ways and was creative usage with Kyle Shanahan there, and he would just smoke zone coverage. Last year, he took a pretty big step back against zone coverage, but against man coverage, he had fourth worst success rate I've ever charted against man coverage last year. And I know he was dealing with pneumonia, some of the issues there last year, But I also thought you saw some of the decline even before the week seven pneumonia situation where he just wasn't looking as explosive against man coverage anymore. Well, the best way to work around that as a starting receiver is stick that guy in the slot. And so far this year, Deebo Samuel is one of 10 wide receivers with 17 receptions versus zone coverage. This is important too, because this week he plays a Chargers defense that's seventh highest in zone coverage rate, according to Fantasy Points data. So it's a tough matchup that might have people nervous about Deebo, but schematically, I think this is great usage for getting the best out of Deebo at this stage of his career. And it's a matchup where from that slot position, he should be able to thrive still.
Yeah, I didn't know. I did not know that, you know, 17 of his receptions versus zone, that's freaking good. And you got this matchup, seventh highest zone rate with Los Angeles, and who knows what they look like offensively with Joe Alt. I believe it's already confirmed he's going to be out for a little bit. Listen, this is one of these. Do we know? I'm just curious. Do we know if JD5 is playing? Is Jaden in or out? I know he, you know, there was some chance that he could play last week, but does it matter?
It sounded like he was close. I think it definitely matters to some degree. But I mean, Marcus Mariota is able to run the offense at least.
That's what I mean. Even if the Commanders are like, we're going to give him one more week, right? We're not going to throw him out there versus the Chargers. I think this role for Deebo is exact to the point of what you're making. It's exactly what you want him to do. And then when he receives the ball, when he catches it versus that zone, you know what he's trying to do. He's turning around. He's trying to make people miss, create after the catch. Like, that's what you want Deebo to do. I don't need him lining up on the outside trying to win. Like, we're not... We don't need that, man.
Yeah.
Stick his butt inside, get him the ball, let him settle down in those windows versus zone, which he seems to always, coming out of South Carolina, be really good to do. I'm very much still here for a bounce back Deebo season. I wasn't super high on him at the beginning when he was signed, but as we started to get through the summer, and I'm like, hey, man, if that's his role, if this is how they're going to use him, I'm in. And by the time we got to the draft season, I was all in Deebo. So I'm loving this, man. I hate that McLaurin's out. We don't wish for injuries, but this is good for Deebo Samuel.
Now, I was very skeptical if he was going to continue to be used the same way he was in San Francisco here in Washington, even if he was going to, you know, do some screens and things of that nature. But just to repeat the stat, because I did screw up the list here, he had never been in the slot on more than 29% of his snaps in any year in San Francisco, and it's at 69.9% so far this year. So that is a big role change, and that's the that's how you get the best out of an aging player. So I was definitely skeptical of Deebo this year, but this usage change for him is huge. It just changes the picture, and this guy's a top 12 receiver in fantasy football right now. We'll see if that holds up over the course of the season. Obviously, he's a guy who plays a very physical brand of football, but I think as long as Marcus Mariota's running the offense well, or especially if Jaden Daniels is back, Deebo's a guy I want in my fantasy football lineups, and I did not think I'd be saying that here in week number 5. All right, we are going to take our final break. When we come back, it is time to reveal the players that were chopped in the most Yahoo Fantasy Guillotine leagues this week. We'll get to that right after this break. All right, for our final piece of data, let's remember some guys from our Yahoo Fantasy Guillotine Leagues with Coffin Corners presented by Liquid Death. Every week, we reveal the 5 players on the most chopped teams. That is essentially the guys that had dud weeks and cost people their seasons. Then we debate which of the 5 you should break the bank on to go get on your guillotine team. Coming in at number 5, 18% of his teams got chopped. You might be eating your feelings, but he's tweeting his feelings right now because he just basically might have cost you your season. That is Eagles wide receiver AJ Brown. Coming in at number 4, another 18% of his teams got the axe. I made a bet that I was going to eat this pen right here if he doesn't rebound this season. It's not looking good for your boy, and it's not looking good for the people, 18% of them, that had Chargers wide receiver Ladd McConkey. Coming in at number 3, yet again, 18%. That's the magic number this week. He got knocked out of his game with a hamstring injury, and he probably knocked you out of your league. Oh, yes, that's reigning. One of the MVPs, Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. coming in at number two, 21% of his teams got chopped. I mean, another freaking Bengal. I mean, every week we might as well call this Let's Remember Some Bengals, because we've got yet another one here. Bengals wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase, 21% of the teams. How is there even a percentage of teams left with any Bengals for this segment? I mean, how are any of them there? The number one player on the most chopped teams this week. Yeah, Monday Night Hero the week before, the league winner. Where the hell did that go? 23% of teams with David Montgomery, they got chopped this past week. All right, Ray, these are the five most chopped players in Yahoo Fantasy Guillotine Leagues. Which one of them are you breaking the bank on to go get for your guillotine team?
The answer is I'm breaking the bank for one of them. Zero of these wide receivers am I breaking the bank for, but if I had to pick one, I'm still going to bet on the guy that's in what looks like the best situation to be fruitful, that's healthy, that's not tweeting out Bible scriptures. It's Ladd McConkey. I would still pay for Ladd McConkey.
Yeah. Number one, I'm with you there. We got to get an update from you. Like, how many weeks of lack of production do we go back to Ladd? Like, when does he become Ladarius again? Right now, is he just, he's just Ladd right now? Is that the situation?
He ain't Ladarius right now. He is not Ladarius. Plain old Ladd okay. McConkey. I just need to get opportunity, man. Catch the ball. Confidence, Ladd. He had some opportunity. Catch the ball. He still got Herbert. I'm taking Ladd over A.J. Brown. Ja'Marr Chase's situation is just so bad. Lamar is hurt. And Monty is just Monty. I love him. He's a good player. Don't call him a power back either.
Apparently not. Yeah, QJ took all of Ladd's confidence like the bros in Space Jam. That's apparently what happened. Shout out to the Panic Meter submission yesterday on that one. No, I'm with Ray that the guy I'd go get is Ladd McConkey. But frankly, like, break the bank, I don't think it's anybody here. And let me tell you guys, like, sometimes if you're playing in these guillotine leagues, your Yahoo Fantasy Guillotine Leagues, this is your first year. This is my first year doing one. And week two, I broke the bank for Nico Collins in mind, and I'm still alive. I'm still kicking. Don't worry about me. I'm not totally regretting that, but I spent like 700 out of $1,000 to get Nico Collins. And every week I'm like, kind of, man, I wish I'd saved it for this guy. One of them was Malik Nabers. It turned out fine. I guess I'm glad I didn't go break the bank for Malik Nabers, but still, like, Justin Jefferson's out there. And it's one of those things, like, you don't have to break the bank every single week. So I do think Ladd is the right ad of this group, but strategy wise, it doesn't always have to be drop the Bills every single week, because guess what? Somebody's getting chopped next week, and it might be an even better player that just had some bad luck the week before. Just don't waste on any Bengals, okay? Don't be picking up Bengals in your Yahoo Fantasy Guillotine League. All right, it's time to close the lid on this week's Coffin Corners, courtesy of Liquid Death. If your Guillotine League got chopped because you drafted too many Bengals, better luck next season. Just a reminder, you can always fire up a brand new league with Yahoo Fantasy Guillotine Leagues presented by Liquid Death. Ray Garvin, we said it all. We did it all. We fear-mongered. We got people hyped up about Xavier Worthy. We talked some slot snaps. Good show, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
No doubt, man. Much love. Much love. Thank you, everybody out there watching us, man.
No doubt. Yes. Thank you to everybody watching. Thank you to those who participate in the YouTube chat. Wherever you're watching, listening, we would love it if you leave a rating, review, like, subscribe to the channel. Do all the things. You're adults. You know what to do out there. We would really appreciate it. Make sure you're reading all of Ray's work on the website, and you come back and watch us again on the data dump here next week. But make sure you come back tomorrow, because Nate Tice joins me for yet another edition of the Fantasy Film Room preview Thursday night. We talk some things you need to know from the film for your fantasy football teams. Big show that will be tomorrow right here, 5 p.m. Eastern, live on YouTube. Until then, we are out.